Jay Bird. Do I sound any different?
Steve, you sound a little fuzzy. What's going on?
I'm fuzzy. I'm on the road yet again, folks. Running around.
Breaker 19. Do you copy?
Running around.
Check.
Once again from a dirty hotel room. So,
he's on tour, folks.
And the heck no. I'll tell you what though. What was it? Just a couple days ago, I guess we did a podcast after. It was up there in West by God. Right. So keeping the roads hot, did West by God, Virginia, did a little TV thing up there. Now I'm over here fishing with some clients down the road, you know, so doing that, living that filthy hotel life, Jay. I got Starla and Wanda, some lovely ladies. They were down at the truck stop. They're hanging out with me this evening.
So, yeah, sure they are.
Some wonderful, wonderful local ladies. You know, it's amazing what $10 will do in central Tennessee.
Now, man, the excitement never stops down there. It really doesn't.
Just despicable, Jay. Just despicable. Anyway.
Is it real?
Ooh, okay. Nah, not really. It's whatever.
Okay.
I'm a complainer. Anyway, man, Jay, of all things, got to drop it on him. Didn't know. I was trying to get him there when the line was. Super excited. Just super, super excited about a couple things. Number one, the replacement tails for the Kraken, which just went bananas. Just gone, baby, gone. There's a couple pumpkin left, I think. Like, barely. The tail should be back in this week. So if you got your Krakens and you want some more tails, you can get your hands on them this week. They'll be back in. But, you know, of all the projects I'm working on, I did the line. I got to say thank you to everybody. Sorry for the noise floor there. Thank you to everybody. The line has gone crazy. Getting some killer feedback from everybody. If you fished with me on the boat in the last 2 years, you've seen it. People are freaking about it. How much line you get and what you paid for it, right? I'm big on value, Jay, as they say. Value shoppers, right? Blue light special.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times in fishing, if you put the word musky on something, what is it? Expensive. So, right? At times, you know, and the shop does a good job trying to keep it value-based. But your buddy Steve, and you've seen him, if you watched a Musky Shop TV video or seen a picture, for years, I have worn Maui Jim sunglasses. So, about 5 years ago, I got that pair of sunglasses, right? And you wear, not the same pair, but loved them. I was like, these are perfect. And I went to replace them to get a new pair, and I had sticker shock so bad I wanted to die. And embarrassingly so, I paid $500 on eBay for a used pair of sunglasses, right? Because I wanted really good glasses. Then I'm going to Lake of the Woods. I need tanic lenses, right? I need something different. And I had tried everything on planet Earth, right? Everything on planet Earth, glasses-wise, and these were the bomb.com. Well, guess what? I might have had a bunch of Pepsis, and I start researching polarized lenses. I go down the rabbit hole. Jay, you've been on the tubes of you, and 4 hours later you believe in aliens because you watch so many Joe Rogan Experience podcasts, and you're you know, you're trained. Jay picked up a milk jug full of rocks. He's training for the UFC in his living room, and then smoking peyote and talking about aliens. You know, I've been there.
Bigfoot's real, man.
It doesn't matter. Yeah, you get down the shorts clips, you get down this stuff, and somehow you wake up. It's 4 a.m. You got to be up at 7. And I know everything about the Inca Empire, right? And how to put people in a chokehold. It's YouTube is bizarre. Well, remember the show and the freaking, I still love it. It's a Canadian show. How It's Made, right? On this episode of How It's Made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pencils, skateboards, right? And whatever. I'm sorry. I wanted to say something really horrible of like what the episode would be of How It's Made. Well, I crawl down the rabbit hole of polarized sunglasses. And I realize I've been getting scammed for about 5 years, Jay. So I realized real quick that a good pair of glasses doesn't have to be expensive. Long story short, I went down the rabbit hole of research. It's literally been, what, a year? Jay, you've known about it, been tweaking at it and, you know, checking out this and checking out that.
Right.
Figured out how they make these sons of guns and that you can make them for nothing. And so I'm happy to announce Next Level Shades. You got the book, you got the line, you got the baits, you got all this crap. Freaking the best sunglasses I've ever worn, right? And you go, I'm comparing these to my $500 Maui Jims and my Costas and all the other crap I've worn. And here it is, boys, $24.99. And I go, dang. So I passed along the other pairs of glasses I had to other people that are as dumb as me on eBay, because I'm going, one for one, if you understand how a polarized lens is made and the quality of the lens, it doesn't matter. So got those, and it's literally one of these things, just like the line is, how dirty cheap can we make it, and how freaking awesome can we make them? So $24.99, you get your sunglasses, you get a storage box, you get a freaking cleaning storage rag, whatever. If they fall off your face on the boat, Jay, guess what you can do? Not care. So that's the trick. It's just like, you know, you lose a good pair of sunglasses like Costas or something like that, and it's freaking $150, or you step on them or whatever. $24.99, and these are Wayfarers. The other problem I have with sunglasses is this, Jay, right?
What's that?
Every pair of musky glasses looks like you're about to drink 4 Pepsis at Applebee's and yell at your wife in public.
Right? Okay.
Right. Shut up, Debbie. Right. You get loaded and you're just absolute, like, it's like freaking drunk, abusive boomer look. They all just have that look and I hate it. It's like one step away from Oakley's. No offense if you like Oakley's or whatever, but do not come at me with that freaking just something that looks like, man, these work on the musky boat and at a NASCAR event. You know, where.
Right.
So these are Wayfarers. You can look like a human being and not look like something from Blade Runner or a country music video. That's the other thing, right? You know, now if you're rocking, the other thing is this, you know, I'm not knocking it. If you get those, excuse me, those Oakley Pit Vipers. Have you seen those, Jay? Like the big, like, it's like a mono lens. It's just like one thing, like snow ski goggles.
Okay, yeah.
You'll see NFL. I mean, that's got a little drip to it. A little swag, as the kids call it. But no, these are kind of a classic Wayfarer look. They are really, really, really durable. That was my biggest thing. You can grab a pair of these and you can twist them. You can twerk them. You're not going to break them. It's a slightly rubberized plastic. It's not brittle. I've been wearing them for a hot minute while we prototyped. And they are 2 colors. Musky guide. Wow, because they're made for musky fishing, which is black lenses. Kind of perfect for just about any scenario. And then Trophy King, which is a blue lens. Like on the outside, it's like kind of like Texas cop blue, like old Ray-Bans would be or whatever.
Right.
Which is really good in turbid, tannic, and dark conditions. And so it's not a blue lens you're seeing. It's actually more of a brownish turbidity kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? So people are going to ask, I know they are, what's better? If I'm fishing stain water, do I want Trophy King or clear water? So in general, musky guide, that color, just the blacked out lenses, that's going to be ripping just about anywhere. But if you fish mainly tannic, I would recommend that Trophy King. You know, maybe we'll do other stuff, but this is all I need. This is all most people are going to need, right?
Very cool. Yeah.
And like I said, I'm not trying to beat a dead horse. It's freaking, I'm not here to freaking ride off into the sunset like the Monopoly man. If I would freaking charge an arm and a leg for him if I was. I just get sick of this shit, Jay.
Yeah.
And when I found out, it was like the line. Yeah, this moment, it's an epiphany moment where you go, holy crap, we've been getting hosed, buddy, right? You know, like they make that for that and you get how much? Same thing with the glasses. So, again, if you got glasses you like, just like I said about the line, yeah, you don't need them. If you're like, man, my glasses suck because everything that's cool and supposed to be really well polarized is $1 billion, this is for you. You know, and there's a guy today on the boat. We were talking. He said, I really like so-and-so line, right? He was a master braid guy like you, Jay. Doesn't troll, doesn't care. I said, he's like, should I switch? I said, no. You know, it's like one of these things. If you like Cortland Master Braid and you're cool with it, you don't need that. But if you're like, man, I hate everything else and I want some more volume, as far as that's there. So check them out, man. They're freaking sunglasses. Are you going to catch more fish for them? Yeah. I'm teasing.
Yes.
Yeah. Shameless plug. Yes. Guaranteed. Jay, come in with like the thing you hear at the end of car commercial. Personal, this is not recommended, right? The really fast thing they like put it at the end of radio ads. Does not guarantee a catch. Now, like I said, I was just sick of it. And also, too, I definitely wanted sunglasses that didn't look like I said, you went for half price half at Applebee's and got arrested. You know, I mean, it's not the look we want to have on the water. You know, here's my freaking ridiculous glasses. I was having them half price apps and then I fought the bartender and three sheriffs. You know, come bail me out, baby. I'll never do it again. Anyway, are you seeing it in your head, Jay?
I'm putting this all together. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, I got you.
Well, they don't do that, you know, just whatever. Moving on.
Yeah.
Freaking got some cool comings and goings on the other stuff. Something again, love it. Can't say enough. Tom freaking LeBeau. Beautiful baits. You got the freaking Big Fork Shimmering Shad. That's a mouthful. I'm going to give him that. Big Fork
Shimmering Shad Hollow. Yeah.
Hollow Sand Cat Series. But just a sorry for the pops clicks. It's called Bad Internet. At the old freaking no-tell motel here. Beautiful baits. Roll that beautiful bean footage, Jay. He does impeccable work. You know what? If you just want to look at pretty baits, Tom LeBeau, Big Fork Lures. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, he's got some 2024 colors. He's got three new ones this year that he's been researching and developing for quite a while. He gets really into it, folks. Yeah. And yeah, he decided on these three and they look great. And we just got him in the new the jointed LAT Twitch starters came in a week or two ago. That's his new crankbait, but these new colors just became available in the Sandcat series. Four different models in that. So we just put those up, I think, Friday. So they look great. And the Shimmer and Shad Hollows is his baby, but the Rainbow Prism Shiner is an excellent loud color if you're looking for something super flashy and bright.
Very cool. Well, that's, again, the LeBeau Meister. Can't complain there. Always cool stuff. He did the Black Mamba and whatever. I can't say enough. Like I said, that freaking the Big Fort of the Sand Cat. I don't know if it's a crank or dive and rise, but it's cool. Anyway, Jay, this week, you know, it's beyond moderately influenced by what's going on in the boat about where we sort of go every week, you know. Where do we end up? What do we talk about? I had some cool people on the boat, but something that came up that it's sort of like a guy that's been listening for a while, but not since the day one, right? He's like, I've caught up across the years. Something we used to talk about a lot was bank fishing. And we haven't covered it in a while, so I wanted to at least throw out some creaker concepts, Jay. Remember talking about creaking?
Well, sure. Here we go. Yeah.
Jay is if you don't know this, Jay is creaker supreme. You fish a small stretch, relatively rare stretch of nivers and rivers, son. I just left Applebee's. I'm teasing. So.
But I left my Oakleys on the counter.
Okay, I called down there. Hello, it's Applebee.
Did you I got leave a pair of Oakleys laying there?
A pair of white Oakleys down there.
Got mirrored lenses. Red frames.
I was wearing the Jeff Gordon shirt.
I had that NASCAR shirt on.
Like everyone else, sir. Anyway. God.
It's half price apps. Damn it. Give me a quesadillas.
Yeah, you're talking about a river.
River, creek.
Creaking.
I mean, Jay, you bank fish a little, but I know you go over to the rainbow flowage. Jay loves to a good walk-in, you know. He's got a case of the old crusty knee, so he's got to get a walk-in. Why not catch some fish? And there's a different element where, you know, yes, the concept of musky fishing in general is we are on some giganto boat, right, with gigantic mm-hmm. rods, and we can do anything and everything. There is a spirit of thrift in the reality of that matter, which is if you're on skinny water, limited access, or places that make more sense bank fishing, you can be just as effective, right? And it's a pretty much an augmentation in gear, I would say, in a headset, right? And I was talking about some of my quote-unquote creeker excursions, whether it be tiny John boat trips or going in literally a bassin buggy, if you know what that is. You know, Jay, it's like little side-by-side plastic mold boats and just sure. bank fishing where, you know, some of the recommendations might be different. If you said, hey, what net do I need? Well, you know, in a perfect world, I'm going to tell you, get a Frabel, a clam, something large and in charge, where if you're a bank fisherman, the Stowmaster folding net is your friend, right?
It sure is.
And something I would talk about in that regard as well is rods. Well, I'm throwing an 8.6 or I'm throwing a 9-footer. Sometimes if you're creek fishing, a 7.6, 8-foot, or whatever you can get your hands on is better because you can actually do some kind of swirl in shallow water, right? Because you're generally confined to a shallow area. So, yes, the additional length might be beneficial in a boat, but if you're a shore angler or you're fishing, I mean, there's scenarios, and there's a couple places that I actually actively bank fish, right? Sounds crazy. It's the only way you can do it. Right? It's not my favorite thing to do. And there's a stretch of river I fish out of a freaking the John boat I stole from Jay's driveway. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. I gave it to you.
Yeah, well, I stole it. Nonetheless.
It's not stolen.
I don't take favors. I'd rather be a thief than a beggar. But nonetheless, Jay gave me a John boat, you know. Nonetheless.
Yeah, you put that to use a few years ago, too. That was a cool trip. You should do that again. That's a cool little stretch.
I have the footage. We just never used it. It's kind of cool because here you go from here's the Steve Paul low of thunder, 21 feet of pain, to 12 feet in a hand tiller. And I think I broke out at that time, I want to say 6-foot premieres from like, they were the first St. Croix ever made in like 1908. That's all you could throw. So,
6-footers were popular back then.
Yeah,
there was
a 6-foot. But at a certain point, you're going to have to augment your gear, right? And what I would get at is if you're a bank angler or because there's some great places. I've got friends that fish certain stretches of river where you go, oh, you can't get a boat in there, but you're going to catch some fish. Thrift, and shorter gear seems to be the key, right? So shorter rods. And the other thing I'd say is this is a bank angler. Freaking floating baits, right? This came up with a guy I was fishing with the other day. He was saying, I'll be reeling, and I'll hit a rock, and I'll let it float up. You have this certain level of awareness when you're fishing shallow water or you're in a position where you can't get the bait back, right? It puts a modicum of onus on you to not lose baits, right? Because I've been there where, well, you know what? I can wade out in this water that will probably knock me sideways and I'll drown. Or I can just put pressure on this line and walk backwards until it snaps. There's your choices. I would say there's a learning curve or a lesson in bank angling in the fact of awareness, right? Where I take clients out of all skill levels. And I get guys and they hit a tree branch and they light it up. And I go, hey, don't worry about it. I'd rather you set the hook than not. Where if you're on the bank and I have to go swim for it, I prefer that you realize the difference between a rock, a tree, and a strike. That'd be great if you could do that for me, please. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
that'd
yeah.
be cool if I don't have my scuba gear. So it'd be real cool if you'd figure out the difference now than later, right?
Yeah. Help me out here. Those are expensive. Yeah.
Help me out, dude, because we ain't getting that back unless you can jump this river and we can pull it out backwards. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's an interesting thing of knowing you can't get it back. It puts it on you to go be a little more touch sensitive and be aware. Something to consider. Now, in a more practical sense, you know, if I'm fishing densely vegetated stretches of river with limited access or limited areas where I'm dealing with like traipsing around and I'm walking and dealing with it, shorter rods, folding net, and a freaking backpack with like two Planos.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not going to drag a Lakewood Monster, a Frable Big Kahuna, and a 9'6" rod around. Not going to happen. You can try it. You may not like it, right?
No, if you can strap everything you need that day for your little excursion to your body, you're better off.
Right, exactly. You know,
so. It's, it sucks having to set stuff down all the time and then pick it up after you want to move, you know, another 4 feet. You're right.
Right, but just a concept, because there are tons of small creeks, tons of small areas where there ain't no shame in bank fishing. Never has been, especially when you have places that are inaccessible by boat.
Absolutely.
And there's a lot of opportunity there. So if you're a guy that's like, eh, I got a boat, why would I ever do that? There's a point to go, man, you might be missing out, right? And the reason being, you know, whether it be a water temperature thing, it's too hot, too cold, whether it be, a rain thing. You know, if a lake's blown out and there's an outflow on it, put me on the river before I'm on the lake. Bring it on, right? And go ahead.
You just hit it. You said, and this is a lot of people's excuse for that. It's like, I got a big boat. Why would I do that? Like, yeah, put a little adventure in your life. Do it every once in a while. Could be just as productive if you're on the right spot at the right time.
I need the car.
There's a lot of opportunities for that around by me. And it's just like these, there's, feeder rivers, basically, yeah. You know, part of the Wisconsin river system. I mean, it goes all over the
forever.
Place. There's a lot of cool.
And I think it just
kind of untapped areas.
I mean, I grew up fishing that crap.
Mm-hmm.
And so just a couple, like I said, if the majority of what you're ever going to read, hear, or see is going to be a dude in a Lund or a dude in a big boat, right? I've caught Donkey Kongs out of John boats. Donkey Kongs, right? I got to stretch a time. River is a, to say river is giving this thing far more credence than it deserves, right? Bloviated creek. I'm pretty confident that I can move a 4-footer and they're given enough time, right?
Yeah. Well, you told me that one we were just talking about a couple of years ago that you took my old John boat on. Mm-hmm. You said like the mean depth was like a foot. There's great stretches where there's barely a foot of water in that thing, and then there's these beautiful holes and whoa.
I'm a sucker for a beautiful hole, Jay. It just is what it is.
Of course. Absolutely.
And so, you know, that is, it's not something because of, again, the same thing with the boat crap. Talk about the freaking pot calling the kettle black. My lazy ass, well, you know what? This is a little bit more work than I'm willing to do. But there are times where you go, that's the bite where this might be far more productive than, excuse me, a reservoir or a lake, right? It's something to consider where either you're getting in the game is what I'm getting at, right? So, pardon, if you're considering how do I catch more fish or get in the game, you can bank fish it. However, if you go, my lake is dead as a doornail, X, Y, and Z, right? Nobody's catching anything. Nothing's happening. If you have access to some of these small waterways, what I like about them, say like the Mud River in West Virginia, it's a pretty long river, but I'll tell you what, they can't go deep. You know? Oh, it's a cold front. Well, we'll put a bait that runs 2 feet deep on and we'll get them. Right? Or a small creek or whatever it might be. It's a different game. It's just a different read and it gets overlooked. You know, some of the stuff that you can sort of add to your game plan for success continue, because like I said, I mean, guess what doesn't turn over, Jay? A river. I've heard for years people singing the blues up north. Oh, it's turnover. Go to a river. Get on a river. Rivers don't turn over. Right? Maybe they do. I hope I'm not wrong. I'll get 40. Well, pardon me, this stretch of this river. Shut up. I don't want to hear it, right? But it's like current and flow. I don't think there's any turnover. I'm just being an idiot. There's just something to be said about the access. So how do we do that? I should shut up and move on. How do you approach creek fishing, bank fishing, a limited scenario? It is a structural game, just like anything else. What I think that I learned from really my formative years as a creeker would be reading the water, if you know, where, okay, in most instances, the inside turn is built up sediment and the outside turn is eroded, right? So how do I confirm or deny that the inside turn is built up with sediment and the outside turn's cut with current? You know, probative baits, checking things out where you don't have a depth, even a depth finder, right? But finding holes, finding structural elements in reading the river and going, okay, what's going on here, right? Well, miraculously, I threw out a floating crankbait, and guess what? It stopped right there. It stopped moving. That's called slack water, ladies, right? So with limited electronics and better observational skills, you can start seeing what's happening there where you don't need panoptics. And what am I running? Freaking 4 units on the boat. It looks like a freaking Best Buy, right? But I can smack them out of a 12-foot John boat. Learn that read. And then, you know, if you're in a position, like I said, hey, I know or I've heard there's muskies in this, and you're going, pressure? It's another thing. Turnover. Oh, there's so much pressure. There is no pressure on rivers or creeks or bank access. None. I mean, you can't, you know, maybe, again, somebody's going, well, on this, there's a million people. Okay, one place in North America. You know, whatever. Not happening. So if you're in a high-pressure area, I would rather fish a water with low density in a creek, a bank fishing scenario, than a low-density lake that sees 50 boats a day, right? It's just not what we conceptualize as, quote-unquote, real muskie fishing. You know, there's not a freaking advertisement of some dingus standing on the bank holding a muskie in the mud, right? Like, it's like, oh, here I am. So, just something to consider. Again, how you read the water is going to be the most important. There's the older stuff we've gone more in depth on this, but you can be highly effective. I'll say the other thing that bank fishing will teach you, and if you're bank fishing, you're not doing this, is saturation casting. We say this all the time, Jay. So if moving downstream or upstream or whatever your movement is or whatever your body water fishing, entails that you've got to pick up your net, pick up your backpack, traipse through some poison ivy, fight off four raccoons before you're reestablished for more casts. Guess what you utilize? As many casts on a spot as you can get. Right? And I picked that up from creeker fishing. That's where I got
it. Yeah, that's an advantage. I look at that same way.
You know, the more time you spend, the more saturation you get, mm-hmm. your odds are higher. You know, so you're going to utilize what you have access to more than what you get is boat ADD, right? The trolling motor's on 6. You're hauling butt around the edges looking for a hot one. Well, listen, I know I've got to crawl under 3 logs, you know, get spiders in my hair and do this. I'm pretty cool. I'm going to finish this spot out pretty good because you can fish less. So it teaches you just like teaching you the difference between a bouncy limb and a rock and a fish. It goes, listen, man, I don't feel like moving. I'm just going to keep blasting this. And after your 100th cast, guess what happened? Here comes the fish and here's a follow. Now, from a technical standpoint is what I'll get at, whether you're in a lake, river, creek, whatever. It sucks in a figure eight scenario, right? There's a couple places where I felt comfortable enough as a kid where I would, in the summer months, you know, get up to my knees, right, and be able to figure eight in the water, which is probably really dumb in retrospect. Now, don't do this, but you could, because I just thought about now as a far older, wiser man, the thought of a muskie with a bait swimming around my legs is probably really dumb. However, if you're an idiot kid, and I take no responsibility, you could get in the water a little bit and figure eight by that fish if you know what I'm saying, if it deepens up a little bit, but don't do it. But if you wanted to, you could, but don't do it because I said to do it, right? I literally just said that, and I was like, oh, God, no.
That could be a bizarre injury right there.
Oh, the thought of a freaking double eights and a fish, you know.
How'd you lose your leg, Papa? Well,
what happened to your kneecap? You won't believe
it. It was the summer of 1999. There was a Mill Creek, you know, just so not something to recommend.
But you're going to have to make adjustments. Again, what does it teach you? What are the merits of this? Don't lose baits. You have a better feel for things, right? You saturate cast more. Wonderful. You learn how to trigger a fish mid-cast and on the freaking cast more because you don't get figure eight fish.
You need to read the water great, too. You're going to read the water.
So there are, if you're totally, like it's Avro Potabank fish, and you're like, I got a Crestliner, what do I need this for? It will change. It will rewire some of how you think, and it is meritous when you're on your boat to go, maybe I ought to just blast at this deep point about 30 more casts and see what happens. Because when I caught one below the spillway, I made 400 casts because I was too lazy to walk. You know, so from a technical standpoint, you know, there's a lot of things you can do. We could go on forever. Stay mobile. We've said that in the past. Pack light, blah, 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 blah. Floating baits, blah, 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 blah. The mental thing. That's what's interesting to me. The mental game of that, of how you address, how you read the water, because there's no looking
baits
at the
float, crankbaits.
Right. You're a better crankbait fisherman. You're better at reading things because you don't have that down scan, side scan. You know, there's, you know, a way to skin that cat, if you will. I'm going to shut up. If you're not creaking, go creaking at least once. For real. It will change your game. Dan Smith, I'm a loyal listener to the podcast. You're my Monday morning entertainment. Love reading Next Level Book. Thank you so much. He says he's a fan. I'm going to skip this. He says he's a fanboy. Well, I appreciate that.
Ooh.
He said, I'm a 64-year-old, 45-year musky nut, and at my age, cheap-ass pliers just make it hard to on the fly. He's asking what is the best split ring. This guy's 65, and he ends his skipping. It's a great email. It ends it with yee yee, Jay. So let's give him a yee yee.
Yee yee.
So you deserve that, buddy. Thanks for listening.
Creaking.
Creaking, yeah. He might be a creaker. Who knows? Maybe
could
maybe he's got so many DUIs he's not allowed to drive a boat anymore. It can happen. up to.
So, you never know. You know, Dan could be a closet creaker.
65 years old is long enough to get in some trouble. And I'm guessing if you end an email with Yee Yee, he's been there. I ain't judge. Dan ain't judgmental. I'm a realist. Yee Yee. What I say about split ring point? Jay, I always pronounce it wrong. That's the blue handle was Zenron.
Zeron.
There you go.
Yeah, the Zerons are great.
That's the best I've ever used. They just work. So, you know, I don't know. The other thing is this, and I'm just rambling because I'm tired. I don't know if I've ever paid for a pair, Jay. And I mean,
stolen. No,
just like it's like an umbrella on my boat, right? Like a dude will bring them, and you're like, "How did I get two pairs of these?" Right? And then a month later,
Jim, you got a split ring putter's hand.
Yeah, Jim, here you go. That's how I've got every split.
So you know, he's short two more.
Right, Jim, you got any more? Like, yeah, it's not like I'm walking the store and take them. It's like somehow somebody gets them out, lays them on the boat, and they end up there. And you go, I have three pairs. Now I have one pair. You know, so it's the umbrella philosophy for me. How much are those things, Jay? Zerons.
Less than $20.
They're worth every penny, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you can't go wrong there. I mean, you know, just don't bring them on my boat. I'll end up with them. You know, put a tether on them. I've tried some of the other brands. I mean, there's like, not to knock them, like the Rapala ones. The Zerons have been the best, especially if I'm dealing with smaller split rings. And I think that's the thing. Say like the split rings on a crane bait, right? That's a little split ring, you know, so that's the, I don't think there's any, that's the best. I'll shut up, you know.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Split Ring Plier Podcast. This week,
agree.
We review 43 new pairs of split ring pliers. Who's truly the best? forget about that. That's one of the few topics where I just go, no, that's it. Moving on. That is the one. That's what you want. Oh, my goodness. Let me read here again. I'm on the fly. I don't have. Okay. Read them in real time, as always. Anthony, not sure if you're able to answer these questions, but I have a couple. Okay. Will there be any other 10-pound test of next level braid? Not at this point. He says he fishes 65. It's 80s, kind of the general spec for that. I'm not trying to do too much, you know what I'm saying? I just wanted to be honest with you, like between the sunglasses and the line, it's this, I wanted it, you know. So it's like running 80. Yeah, we might, but very, very doubtful. Looking forward to trying out the line. He goes on to ask about the other tails we've teased about on the crack, and yes, I can talk about that one for sure too. I would say that season opener Wisconsin, we should have them. And okay, me and Jay talked about we're gonna do a sneak preview video of those with the Kraken. For anybody that doesn't listen to the podcast, they would think they're available, right? Like we'd be like the muskie shop would getting blown up, like why can't I get that tail? So we found it was best to just hold on to that footage, so you'll see footage of those in action. I can promise you it's cool. So they'll be there. And they're also, too, back to being who I am, they're not going to be expensive, which is awesome. He continues, I'm looking at two different reel options between a pin squall and a Kuma Komodo, right? He goes on. Here's my problem, and I learned this here recently. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jay. Pin is going to discontinue or has discontinued those reels. The reels.
Not that I've heard of.
What? I thought the pin squall and all these were done.
I don't think they're going to drop them this year. I think they're going to still run them. So.
Okay. Maybe I missed. That's why I asked you and I deferred. So I am.
Things change on a dime with Abu Garcia or Pure Fishing, who owns most everybody. So, I mean, anything could happen, but right now it's still a fairly new reel and they've been running good. And I think they're going to continue.
Don't listen to what I said then. here's the deal. So if we're going apples to apples, Penn versus the Komodo, I think I went on a Komodo rant here recently where I was like, that thing just won't break.
You mentioned that recently.
I can't break a Penn. If you name another reel, I have broken it, I promise you, right? Badly. And it's not from misuse, it's just from wear and tear. I think you're 6-1, half dozen another between those two reels as far as a longevity standpoint and bang for the buck, right? I mean, the Komodo, stainless steel on stainless steel. The Penn I know is brass on brass, both of which are good. I've opened a Penn because I'm an inquisitive little raccoon, Jay. There's not a bunch of plastic in them. That's the kiss of death for me on a reel. Well, let's put, and I'm not naming names, but do you know what one of the worst things is I've ever seen in a reel? Let's put metal on plastic. How does that work out? You know, not the best. The density of the two materials that are interlaced in a gear fashion are highly different. Not good. Brass on brass, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to crawl down the rabbit hole of like the brass could expand more easily than say the stainless in cold weather, but I guess it has its merits. Pick the reel you like the best. I would say this on a 400 series frame. My only commentary would be the Komodos at a 400 are way bigger than the Penn at a 400.
Absolutely true.
That's the only commentary I have. The Komodo 400 is a big reel. So that would be it. But
they make a 300 series Komodo, which is a lot closer to a 60 frame size and a Abu Garcia,
which is closer to a Tranks.
Exactly.
So
very
it's like
close.
One of those things like the 400 set, the 400 Komodo is bigger than a Beast. It's bigger than a Tranks, but the 300 Komodo is about the same.
Yeah, they're just numbers, and it can be really confusing to a great deal of people. I hate that too, because you're spot on, because Shimano, for example, their 400 series reels are going to be right on size-wise and weight-wise compared to a 300 in an Okuma.
I was having the conversation today. So I'm throwing Pro-Rex in the winter and TWs, right?
Yeah.
Getting hooked up on the Daiwa stuff, and I love it. I'm happy with it. Well, before you were throwing Shimano, I said, yeah. Well, why did you switch? I'm not a tiny individual, and the Tranks 400 is slightly small in my hand. So after a while, my hand's kind of doubled up a bit much. If I'm palming, Jay, you're not tiny either. You know what I'm talking about? Where it's like, if it was 10% bigger, it wouldn't be an issue. But the TW is a slightly larger frame, and it's easier to palm for me, where the Tranks is a smaller frame. And so, you know, if you're a freaking monster of a man, the Komodo might be perfect. Where I find the Komodo to be, and I love the reel, no complaints about it, it's big, right? Probably my all-time favorite reel, I've told everybody this, and they haven't made them forever, is the Revo Toro 60 size, right? And people said they were too big. So, it's like rods, it's whatever. I think we're at the point where we're splitting atoms anymore on reels. And I think a lot of us went through that. Okay, well, your choices are this, Jay. You can pay a king's ransom for a conquest, right?
Mm-hmm.
Every normal person on earth that didn't wear a monocle to work bought an Abu Garcia, right? So I'm going to buy Reading Railroad today and go musky fishing. So, you know, the all brass Shimano was like I said, pretty ritzy, great reel, but it's expensive. And the rest of us plebes rocked out on a Abu Garcia. And if you're super budget conscientious, you have what, Daiwa Millionaire. That was it, right? That was what you had. And they were all frame size very similar. Now with the super reels, we've gotten to, everybody's in about the same ballpark on drag. Everybody's about the same ballpark on quality. You know, everybody's got a hit. Some companies have a hit or miss. There's some rails you could say, there's some rails you go, this is better. But if you're fishing 50 days a year, I don't think there's a single reel you would, and 50 days a year on musky water is a lot for an average human being. You know what I'm saying? That's a plenty of time. Most people don't even do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a single reel I'd say, no, you're going to get years out of it. Barring misuse, or again, I put a thing up on the app going out and, yeah, dude, when you're fishing and it's 2 degrees, guess what's going to happen? You're going to break stuff. Guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
But in a normal application, you know, yes, if you take a pounder and you throw it vertically up in the air and stop it with by turning the handle, bad things happen, right? But, you know, in normal use, I'm not afraid. If there's a Kuma Citrix, I've had really good luck. There was the Max Toro, which is a budget reel from Abu. I think those were $130. I had them in guide reels, like, because they're 5/3 to 1s, right?
Yeah.
Throw them forever. We've sort of plateaued. And what I'm getting at the long way, apparently, I'm sorry, is find the right fit is probably more important than the right quality, if that makes sense. Right? You know, the difference between brand X, Y, and Z, yeah, the devil's in the details, but this, whether it be spool capacity, whether it be this, find the ergonomics that work for you, which is kind of important. It's like me and Jay, you know, both, if you listen long enough, yeah, we're both guitar nerds. Well, you know, if you're not a guitar nerd, I apologize, but, you know, standing on stage with a Fender Telecaster versus a freaking Gibson Firebird is an entirely different conversation.
Just going to say Gibson Firebird. I mean, it's a weird fit. It's a long, right. Yeah.
If you don't right. know, if you don't know what a Firebird, it's the guitar that Edgar Winter played, and he sat down most of the time. It's a freaking boat paddle with strings. It's poorly balanced, right? So, but the ergonomics are probably more important here. Hell, there's more differences between a Telecaster and a Firebird than there is freaking a Tranks and a whatever. So I think that's important to consider. Ergonomics in your reel purchase, just my 2 cents. Forget about what's better. And we've answered this question a bunch of times to discuss this. Better no longer exists in a capacity of more than 10%, in my opinion. Would you think that's a fair assessment?
Look at trucks in the last decade.
I'm not allowed to. Court order.
That's right. Right. Cherokee guy. SUV boy.
Trucks.
I'm just saying, look, you know, everyone's a Ford or the, you know, they like Chevy or they like Dodge or whatever. And it's just like, that's great. But they're all making great products right now.
Are they, though?
15 years ago, would you say that? 20 years ago? The same thing with reels. There are so many choices. Once you pick a gear ratio and a line retrieval rate that fits for what you need.
Yeah,
you know, that, it's, I mean, just, you're, just you're, you know,
we're saying the same thing. Yeah. Which is, yeah, yeah. You're, speaking of the guy that got drunk at Applebee's and, you know, yelled at his wife publicly, you know.
They found your glasses?
Right, they found his glasses, boys. You know, you're a Chevy man or a Ford man or a GMC man, or, you know, you're a creep and you like International Scouts. Everybody has their.
Yeah, and you see that with reels. You know, there's brand loyalty. That is what I'm getting at.
If you're just looking for bang for the buck, I mean, I've yet to see, like I said, the Max Toro is great. Goodness gracious. Hell, there was that one stupid cheap reel, Jay. The Abu Garcia reel that came out and replaced the Max Toro or whatever. Perfectly serviceable reel for like $140.
Yeah, that Max 4.
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. It's just like, there you at. Pick what you like. And I'd say at the end of the day, you know, I'm not saying go to the musky shop. It's not, you know, if somebody that lives in upstate New York, that's a heck of a drive to pick a reel. But if you can get your hands on some of these and you understand that ergonomical thing, because like you said, it's a matter of what fits me versus that, the same conversation. I'm beating a horse here. The horse is obliterated, but I just think of the same thing of what's situationally appropriate, what's appropriate for my body size. You know, the guy that's 5 foot one does not need a 9 foot six. Okay. You know, and I've seen it. I mean, here I've got a Tranx 500 and a 9 foot six reel. You know, it's like, ugh, you know, why don't we downsize it? Another thing, hell, we're just going to go there. It came up with Gabbin on the boat today about reels. Well, what do you like about the Pro-Rex that I have? I said, the frame size, it all feels the same to me, right? I've said it in the past where I get so sick of hearing that reel smooth, right? You don't fish enough if you're real smooth, right? Like, is this silky? Ah, dude, their gears, there will be wear and tear. I don't want something grinding like I'm winching the boat up, but I actually want from a tactile standpoint, this is a rabbit hole, I apologize, a tangent. I don't clean my reels and I don't grease my reels because grease that gets in between it's a dampening effect. I want to feel the bait through the power handle, right? Where you'll have these reels where they all have, except for Shimano, has an EVA knob. And EVA is that freaking foam. It's a dense foam and it translates less tactile response.
So yeah, you're right.
You got a vibration coming up the rod through the line to the spool. The spool's engaged with the gears and then to the handle. Right? Are my blades turning? I can tell you every time because I can feel, not resistance, I can feel the sympathetic vibration that's transferred, which is, you know, a good rod is going to transfer even more because it's got a sensitive end in it, and it's got...
True, but you're right about the handle. I've never thought about that.
Well, I do,
and you're
Jay.
Absolutely right.
These are
the things that, you know, that keep you awake at night.
These are the things that you do when you fish freaking every day of your life, and you go, huh, you bet. Like I tell people on the boat, musky fishing is 10 hours of suffering for 10 seconds of excitement, and your brain runs wild. So, things that I'll look at, right? And this, God, I'm sorry, guys. Do I have a budget rod? Right? And okay, back it up. Have you ever seen me pick a shield rod out?
Yeah, I have.
What do I do?
I don't know. You give it the 10-point inspection before.
What I do when I pick up a rod, right, is I take that rod, I hold the rod in my right hand. I'm a lefty retrieve like an idiot. And what I will do is I'll smack the butt of that rod with my hand, bam, right, and see how long I can feel it. It's vibrating, right, the rod's pulsating, and I want to feel that rod right before it completely stops moving at all. I want to feel the tiniest little tick. And what I'll do, I'll bang it up. Then I'll take it off the floor. Tap. Tiniest little thing, right? I'm not looking for the initial smack. I'm looking for as the force, the rod is absorbing the force, and how long can I feel it? The longer I can feel the vibration, the better it is, which means it's more responsive. Ooh, okay. So people are going to go in the musky shop and start smacking rods. What I do with my EVA handles, which is just nut job land, every time I get one, I take a freaking butane torch and scorch them. Get the sponge out of them. Right? And what I actually do, I don't know if you can see it in a video. If a reel has an EVA handle, my thumb's on the metal that connects. I'm not completely holding that because I want to feel that for if a small presentation's coming through. I can have as much tactile engagement with that bait so I understand what's doing at all times. That's how I set my gear up, right? You go, that's ridiculous. Also, too, on the other hand, you have like the Tranx power handle. That knob drives me nuts. It transfers more vibration, but that thing's freaking honking huge, in my opinion, right? So I try to find the balance where I can, again, we're talking about palming the reel. In my right hand, if I palm the reel, I'm feeling more, right? So are my blades moving? I know if they're moving or not. I never bring in a bait and go, is this RJ spinning? I know it's spinning. I can feel it, right? That is important. If you really want to elevate things, it's down the rabbit hole of stupidness, but it bodes a level of importance. Something that is overlooked, right? When we talk about like double tens and things of that nature, right? Booker had a great tip. Point your rod at the double tens at all time because you're making the reel face work, right? You're not putting a bend in the rod. Well, every other bait other than double tens, which pull like a freaking, you're dragging a cat through the water sideways. No matter what it is, I have my rod cocked at an angle to force contact of the line to the tip of the rod. That is the tiniest ninja trick I will ever say on this podcast. I don't think I've ever said it before. I never point a rod directly at the bait. I have an angle where the tip of the rod is forced to make contact to the point of
enhancing the vibration.
Enhancing the vibration.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So you understand what's happening with the bait. And I'm not worried about, you know, a bait like the Slammer Fatty shakes like a leaf. Love it. Jackhammer, right?
Right on.
Okay. Tap, tap. Huh, my glide bait doesn't feel right. That second tap. I bet you there's a hook talked to it. Like the hook kicked up and touched the bait, right? Or stuck
yeah.
to it.
Yeah.
Can tell you when it happens because it doesn't feel right. I don't have to get halfway in the cast, and then I give it an upward or a downward snap, and it's back to right. If you're paying attention and you know your gear and you know the lure you're throwing and the intrinsic nature of that lure, you can start putting together the picture of what it's doing. Down the rabbit hole of stupidness, some of you are rolling your eyes and go, you're crazy. If I'm wrong, you can freaking have my boat. Because it is literally what do you know is happening. Take Panoptix out of the picture, right, Jay?
Okay.
Completely. The vast majority of my muskie career was done blind. The more I know until we get back into visual range, the importance is huge, right? How is the bait running? The other thing is this, you'll hear guys say this and you go, how do I know if I've got a good bait or a bad bait? You've heard it, you've read it, you've heard people say, this one's better than others, you know. Your buddy Larry Bob opens these tackle boxes. That's my good depth rater. Is it because it's magical? No, it's a piece of butyrite plastic that has come out of a mold that's made, I bet if I asked you, I bet you 500,000 of them at least, right? They're all the same. There might be a tiny variance in this, tiny variance in that just because of it is what it is. Having a really acute sense of how the bait feels allows you to do two things. Differentiate good baits from bad baits. But more importantly, what I'll say is this. There's no bad baits unless they're ill-manufactured, right? It allows you to make baits that are not running right run perfectly. How do you fix a problem if you're unaware of it? Most people, when they think about Joe Padavia this week, tuna crankbait. Okay. He's been doing the same shtick with that for 40 years. And you go, I've seen Joe do that. Why is he, you know, I'm not knocking that at all. I sent him a message that said great content this week when I was putting it on the app. Because it's as true as it is now as it was 40 years ago. And why is it true? Because you have to be aware and fix things. Well, most people know something is wrong when a bait runs sideways and it blows out. Right? That's when the vast majority of anglers become aware there's a problem. When it is so egregious that it's screwing up even a basic retrieve. Well, I threw my depth rater out and it ran sideways and it came to the surface. That's not normal. It is time to address the issue. Ah, no. The thing is this, is we have your buddy Cliff or whatever stupid name I threw out there. Your buddy's got this quote-unquote magical running bait that just by hook or crook he's dumbed into. You need to be aware of what is happening with this bait and how to replicate it. Right? I've picked up crankbaits and gone, that one doesn't feel the same. You can't teach feel, but there's some people out there that will get what I'm saying where you go, take, you know, say you got six slammers, right? If all six slammers feel identical to you, you're not paying enough attention. Right?
I think you're right.
Maybe you got six slammers. What I can tell you, love Bill's stuff, right? Makes great baits. If I pick up six slammers off the shelf, two of them will have epoxy on the nose, right on the inside, right? And you might find one that's slightly cocked this way or slightly cocked that way. And he has tuning videos and it has nothing to do. This is not about how he makes a bait. This is the nature of making baits, right? Slight variations, the tiniest stuff.
Yeah.
Well, if you can't tell the difference, you say these are all the same, you're missing something. You're not being observant enough. That is where the freaking mystification of a certain bait happens and everybody's done it. This is my magic bucktail. Okay? What's magic about it? It's caught. I have one black buck. I don't have this, but I'm saying theoretically. We've all heard it or been there or seen somebody talk about it. I've got one bucktail that's caught more fish than anything else. Okay? Well, aesthetically, is there anything different from your black bucktail and everything else? Well, possibly. This is another tip, right? I've seen bucktails. Sorry, tangent, guys. Sorry. I've seen bucktails where guys like, this has produced 90% of my muskies, right? Well, they've thrown it until there's hardly any tinsel left, and it's this tiny little profile that looks like a RJ's, right? Instead of this big profile. I go, buddy, you probably need to be throwing small profile bucktails where you fish, right? Or the manufacturer changed clevis size. What? What?
That does happen.
Yeah. I've seen it. So you get, you know, Joe Schmo's double eights, right? And you've bought, you know, what's the worst color name you can come up with? It's not real, Jay. You know, Goblin Puss Orange, right? Named after my cat, Goblin Puss. And that color's killer. And I've got one bait that is awesome. And the rest of my baits, I've bought many of them, but this is the one. There's nothing special about that bait. There's something different that you're yet to spend the time to perceive.
Another thing with bucktails is like the lead bead too, the one closest to the clevises. Those sizes can change.
All the time.
All the time. And that makes a big difference of how that thing trips.
And how
probably frequency too. Probably has something to do with frequency.
Okay. I'll just go down the rabbit hole with bucktails. I'm just riffing. I'm laying in a hotel. I got nothing else to do. Sorry. So, a blade, the bucktail. Behind it is kind of that void of vibration, and the blades are going out. Anything you change behind it can influence that. Like you're saying, whether it be the lead beat on how easy it starts, whether it be the clevis changed by one size. Well, I can't blame a guy for using bigger clevises that work because that's all he could get. You know, I mean, you're not going to stop production of a product that people want because, you know, you couldn't get 15,000 pieces of said clevis, so you went with the next best thing, right? Because it's going to work somewhere. So there's minute differences, right? Minute differences take place. What I would say the most important thing is about the observational element of this, is take a bait and literally just break it down. What size clevis is this? Well, you might not, you know, Jake, can you tell me the difference between a size 8 and a size 4 clevis by looking at them? Yes, you can, right? Mm-hmm. The average guy can't. Well, measure them. Well, this bucktail is killing it for me. What size clevis is on this, right? Well, this clevis is killer for me. And the difference between my goblin puss and my other four goblin puss that I can't catch is a clevis size. Well, the clevis size will denote your rotations, right? Smaller clevis, higher revolutions. Bigger clevis, slower revolutions. So that is of uber importance. Did they change the weighting? You know, could they not get 3/4 ounce and they put whatever on it? And I'm not saying, any of this because of anybody is inconsistent. Parts availability, right? Parts availability of
that happens. Yeah,
it'll change. It'll change your product line entirely. Well, listen, I just can't get them, so we're doing to this, and it's not nefarious. It's not a bad. It is what it is. But being observant, so in a bucktail, break down the parts. Right? Break down the parts and go, what is going on here? What does that sinker say or what does it weigh? I've seen bucktail companies change the diameter of their wire for 051 to 045. Totally different bait. Right? Just on that tip, when I go back to the baits, the hard baits, right, where we started. Paying attention to something as minute as the hook gauge, paying attention to the split rings, that's going to influence running depth, right? Then paying attention to, say, like your crankbaits or the way these things run and having that, developing a better sense of observation is where I'm really getting at, right? I'm just, at the end of the day, that's what it is. Anybody mm-hmm. can do it. You just have to be open to the concept that nothing's magical. Everything's replicatable and repeatable. You just have to be aware enough to address what is going on and then logically ascertain the differences. What makes this better than the other? Barring a manufacturing defect, everything should be cool, right? Which is back to saying, like, Joe, I've seen people return Phantoms, Jay. Right? When they use, remember Phantoms used to do the screw-in eyes with the finish washer?
Yeah, right.
People would return those and go, this doesn't work. It's awful. Because
they're just slightly off-center. The tiniest.
Which is, you back in the day, people just expected, I'm going to tune a bait. I'm going to make sure it's dialed in. That's lost. Right? Much the reason I made a Titan. People want a bait, they pull out of the pack and it freaking works. So speaking out of both sides of my mouth, I'm aware of both sides. The art of tuning and dialing in is dead. If you learn to do this and you become observant, you've got a leg up on everybody. On the other hand, your general guy wants to take it out of the box, throw it out there, fish on it. Where, and I can't say this on good authority, this is totally speculative. Yet, did they change the Phantoms to a wire through thing where they didn't have to screw the things in to stop that? So they just knew there was no tuning necessary. Possible. Maybe that's farthest from. But people go, oh, doesn't run. Doesn't run at all. Well, it probably got banged in the shipping box when FedEx delivered it, and it moved 2/16 of the inch. You know what I'm saying? It's like minute. It's minute little details. Where now, like I said, the immediacy of if I buy it, it must work and it has to be perfection. Two schools of thought. Where I went through the era of, well, this is what you got. Make it work and figure it out. Right? So being observant, paying attention to how the bait's reacting, learning to feel that, and then go, well, what can make that bait do that versus this? Right? Well, maybe one bait is slightly heavier than the other, or maybe it has a fatter wobble. Super trick, easy trick. Well, if I want to open up the wobble on something, the addition of a bigger split ring can often do that. You see what I'm saying? Like, you can get there. You just have to use some basic logic and reason to understand how these things work. And there's no longer like this thing. And I've said it on this podcast, my best headlock or my best this. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
On headlocks, it's a piece of wood. So it's you know, they're all slightly tiniest bit. Again, not trying to speak out of school. I think they're consistent as crap, but you might get a piece of different wood and it's got just the slightest thing.
Different buoyancies, right, sure.
Does it matter? Probably not. Is it in my head? Yes. And I think that's the thing of like the one that's quote unquote my best, I hardly ever run it. And I'm still smacking just as many fish. It's just languishing in the tackle box for no good reason. So observe what they're doing. And it's like, okay, I'll say this. And I'm sorry, I'm just running my mouth. Well, my best quote unquote headlock, right? I've told this story. It was a return, Jay. Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
My best headlock. I've caught more big 50-inch plus fish on this than anything. The videos have been on the shop. I just keep banging them on this thing. And I was like, man, this thing's magical. Well, I looked at it, and whoever ran it before, right, and it took me a while to notice, they took a freaking rasp or something and ran it through the holes and crudely routed out the holes. So the holes where the cotter key goes through to connect to that bait, right?
Yeah.
Are wider. So I took a bunch of my baits and went, this is going to suck. Got a rasp and opened them up. I went, well, that opens them up even more. That's a fatter wobble on that bait. Right? There's less surface area on the cotter pin. Whatever. I'm not going to grab a hole, but I just went, well, hell. Now all of them are quote-unquote magical. What is it? And it might not be something as egregious as that. It might be a matter of there's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I'll shut up after this. It's like, you know, Joe famously has fished nothing but factory returns for a long time, right? And his number one bait, if you're on Joe's boat, if you're ever so lucky, there's one rule. You can throw any bait you want, but do not touch this one top raider called Lenny. Don't think about
I've
it.
I've heard it.
Don't look at it. You can't touch it. You can't even smell it. It doesn't exist, right? That is his. You can pick up any of the other ones, throw them as much as you want, but that top raider, you do not get to throw it. Well, what's up with that bait? It's slightly heavier. Somebody, when they made that bait, something wasn't right. And it runs sitting in the water. So the back of the bait is out of the water just barely. Right? And the tail prop comes up and he reels it at a high rod angle. Says blah, 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 blah. But the bait rides lower than any other top raider he has. And he's emulated it. He has other ones that do the exact same thing. But that one's kind of like the litmus test of like, we're not losing this bait because all other ones that he wants to throw in general are sort of emulating that. So, again, mm-hmm. Whatever. And I'm down the rabbit hole. It's a big, long tangent of stupidity. What I'm saying is this. If you have something that is working, take the brevity away and dissect it to the best of your ability. That'd be it. Anyway, I'm sorry. I don't know where we started, but that's where we ended, Jay.
before we ended. I can't remember where we started either.
Me either, folks. Lord, I was born a musky rambling man. Trying to do a podcast and rambling as much as I can. Jay,
yes,
do you wear your next level sunglasses at night?
Well, I'm going to.
Just sleep in them? Just at all?
Oh, time. Man. I can't pull the trigger. I'm not sure which color to get. Musky Guide, or what's the other one called?
Trophy King, Jay.
Trophy King. I'm an amber guy. I might go with that one.
You know, try it out. Anyway, guys, I'm going to shut up. We'll be back live from the Bait Cave next week, Jay.
Nice.
Say, Avita Zay.
Night, guys. Thank you.